Good evening. This is Bill Blatchford, and welcome to our call tonight. The call is sponsored by Rocket Dog Dental. We probably have Michael Elliott on the phone, and Care Credit and Blatchford Solutions. Tonight we have approximately 30 people signed up for this call, and we have Dr. Phil Caduco, who has been a client of Blatchford Solutions for approximately a year. Dr. Caduco is practicing in Vernon Hills, Illinois. It is a northwest suburb of Chicago. He was a Loyola grad, and of course, you know, my background, we think that's special. we are actually orphans at this point, Phil. Well,
that's
Phil,
true.
Let's get this started tonight. We have a nice group of people on here, and I'm not going to call on them. We'll open it up for questions from them a little bit later in the call. Why don't you give us a little background on yourself and your practice, and specifically, what I'd like to know is, what I'd like to have you tell the participants tonight is why you joined our coaching program a year ago.
Okay. The background on the office, I've been a practicing dentist for 20 years, like Bill had mentioned, in Vernon Hills. I love the profession. I have a real dying profession in a sense that I have a passion for it to a point where I live and breathe dentistry. I always believe I've always been a CE junkie, so to speak, and with that in mind, I kind of catapulted the whole thing when it started when I did my GPR program right after graduate Loyola. I'm truly just a general dentist that does practice whatever scope that I could practice, and my main focus at one time was cosmetic, and then we got into TMD, now sleep apnea, and all that. The one thing that I saw was lacking is the fact that I thought practicing big was a thing that I've always seen. Having a big practice was a great thing to have and possess, and more so towards the ego, so to speak. Little did I know that there's a thing out there that I was looking to see how it could really practice more efficiently with, you know, taking off a little bit more off from the practice. So I searched high and low, and I've been to a couple dental practice management. I've done a couple. And at the midwinter meeting last February, I was scouting, and I saw and I sat into Dr. Blatchford's seminar, and what struck me was he's a true coach because in the sense that he wasn't having to do a cookie cutter kind of thing where he sets up systems and you have to follow through with that. What has happened is when I joined Blatchford Solutions, I thought we were going to have to hire more people and establish a big practice to a point where we're going to produce big numbers.
Well, so let's interrupt you for just a little bit. Let's talk about numbers for a minute. You were doing about how much when you joined us?
Around $1.1 million.
About $1.1 million. And you were doing well. I remember your numbers on that. You were taking home roughly between what you were taking home, debt service and pension contributions, you were taking home about $450 of that total.
Right, $450, right.
So life was good. Now, I remember one of the things that you said you wanted was more time off.
Right.
Alan, you have a couple children and a wife who'd like to see you once in a while.
Right.
How many staff did you have at that time?
I had five. We're in the midst of hiring another individual, actually, making it six at that time.
And what were their positions?
Their positions would be two front desk personnel, two chairside assistant, and one full-time hygienist. And we're thinking of an assistant, hiring an assistant to the hygiene department.
And you wanted more time off. I know you and your wife want to take some extended trips. And you know, you wanted to meet your wife's parents in Hawaii, things like that. You know, how much were you working at the time? I mean, how many weeks? You're working 4 days a week, I believe.
4 days a week. We were working long hours. The 4 days that I work, Monday, Tuesday, we work from 7 to 2, and then Wednesday, Thursday, we work from 9 to around 6. I was staying after 2 until sometimes 5 o'clock in the evening sometimes. So it wasn't fun at all.
Let me ask you this question. What were you doing? I find so many doctors, they'll have hours from 7 to 2 or 8 to 4, 8 to 5, and yet when I talk to their spouse, they don't get home till 7, 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. What kind of things were you doing at the office after that your team wasn't able to do?
We were doing charts for myself. I was treatment planning cases that I just saw, especially new patients that just registered in our office, and I was doing I was starting a little bit more towards sleep apnea. And I was doing a lot of medical entry, and that took a lot of time consumption and calling patients post-op, really, things of that nature.
So it really wasn't, I mean, your income was okay. I mean, sure, everybody wants more, I suppose,
right.
But it really wasn't the lack of income that was your interest. It was more quality of life.
Yes, true.
And you didn't want the income to drop as a result
no.
of that.
Right.
Now I've looked at your numbers, and it looks to me like your production was up this year about 20%.
Correct.
And so you did about almost 1.3, I believe.
Well, a little bit of, yeah.
A little over 1.3. Now,
right.
tell us some of, so your income has gone up.
Right.
Tell us some of the changes that you have done or the results of some of the changes you've put in place that have improved the quality of your life.
Wow, big change. I'm down to really just instead of having six employees, I'm down to three team members.
So you have
one front
team
desk.
Members.
Yeah, one front desk personnel, one chairside assistant, and basically my one full-time dental hygienist.
Now these must be some super staff members that I don't know where you found them. Were these people on your team, or are these people you had to go out and find? Or
they were on. No. They one just started when we started the program with you, but no, they have no experience at all. To which no, except for my dental hygienist, she's been with me for almost 10 years. But the other two has no experience, no dental background.
And they were new team members when you started.
They were new team members, almost. Yeah.
So you have three, and you're doing this. So well, you're still 4 days a week?
Yes.
And what are your hours now, and when do you get out of there?
I get out a lot earlier. And we make sure that we get out early, and that's our New Year's resolution. I, you know, at around 2, 2.30, I'm basically out. And then 9 to 6, sometimes we're out around 6, 6.15 the most.
What have you done to get rid of all of that work or that? I mean, everybody has this preparation work. You have your work treating patients, of course. You've shortened that a little bit, but when do you get your administrative things done? Because I talked to your wife, and she says you definitely, she doesn't let you bring it home.
Yeah, I don't bring it home. I have my team members actually pitch in. We're into this year a lot of cross-training. The hygienist actually helps out entering treatment plans and checking out patients as well and scheduling them at the same time.
What does she do, chairside?
My chairside assistant, actually. She checked out a hygienist.
Yeah, what is your hygienist?
My hygienist actually, besides doing hygiene, she does co-diagnosis and she sells the whole case. I don't even get involved in that. I mean,
uh-huh.
She does the whole thing. Yeah.
And you mentioned she does some things in checking out patients. And
right.
What all does she do?
She makes sure that she actually makes sure if it's a new patient, after we finish, we go through the PAR questions that you help us improve and implement. And at the same time, after doing that, she'll make an entry on that. Then, in addition to that, make sure the patient understands what, you know, why the treatment is needed, and she makes financial arrangements at times, and it schedules the patient right there and then.
Well, I haven't asked you this question. I don't know. Is she collecting money at any of her visits?
Sometimes she does.
Mm-hmm.
We're working on that.
Mm-hmm.
We're
That's
working
one
on
of the things that we teach. I didn't know if she'd actually start doing that or not. But
yes,
any of our
to do that. Right.
Collecting for their recall things themselves, and they do that.
Right.
In the hygiene.
Right. Right.
So that eliminates some of the work up at the front desk. And of course,
exactly.
The analogy we've always used is you go to a nice restaurant, they bring the check to the table, and you give them the credit card. It's all handled very discreetly right at the table. And you go to Joe's Diner, and you get the check at the table, but you stand in line at the front desk and
right.
at register, I guess, at this point. and stand there and pay your bill. We're trying to make it a lot more user-friendly for the patient. They can handle the whole thing right there in the privacy of the hygiene room. And of course, when we introduced that the first time a few years ago, we have a lot of resistance to staff. Oh, that won't work and won't work yet. It works well. Okay, so you're working 4 days a week, and you've shortened your work days, and you've boosted your production about 200,000 with a smaller staff. Now, we have a bonus system that we teach, and it's been published a lot, and it's out there. About what are your staff members bonusing currently?
They're around averaging $1,300 per month per cycle, what they call a BAM cycle.
BAM cycle, and that's for you doctors on the call, that's roughly a month, but we divide the year into 12 equal periods, so we have the same number of productive days in each period, so that we compare apples to apples. We're not comparing a long month to a short month. The months are always the same length, and so because one of the things I find is a lot of doctors experience ups and downs in their production, but if you study the number of days they work in a particular month, you might find a huge discrepancy. For example, in February, it's a short month anyway, and if the doctor decides to take a ski vacation, for example, we get very few days in February, and then we're moping around the office that production wasn't very good. Well, in fact, it was probably just as good per day, but we didn't work as many days as, say, March. So your team is bonusing $1,300 a month, and that's one of the things that I saw, that I noticed in your report that you sent to me, and that's one of the reasons you're on this call this night. What does a $1,300 or $1,400 bonus do for the morale in the office? Now, you had shared with me earlier that you had tried to cut overhead for staff in the past. You, as a matter of fact, your staff was telling you that you needed more help.
Now, right.
Instead of going for more help, you in fact have less people there. And what is the morale of the office at this point?
It's phenomenal. It's very contagious. We laugh. We have fun. Accountability is the key thing. I thought it could never be done. I always thought it's going to be, you have to have a big team members to make big numbers, but it's not the case. Mm-hmm. It goes back to the first seminar we had back in Chicago, the Dynamo, and it goes to miles per gallon. And if they don't want to hire another help, I think they could do, and our goal this year is 1.6. with working less days and, you know, vacationing more, and they want a bonus more.
And when they do 1.6, of course, they're at, are you using 20%?
Yes, 20%.
20% for staff. So you see at 1.6 for you doctors on the call. And if some of you have read our A book, we have several doctors in that book. And by the way, we are going to send a complimentary copy of the audio version of the A-book to all of you that are registered on this call tonight. I want you to pay particular attention to some of these numbers that some of these doctors are doing. But at 1.6 million, with the staff getting 20%, that's $320,000. Now, you can divide that 320 by three people in Phil's case, and that's just a little over $100,000 a piece. You can divide it by four, and it drops to 80. You can divide it by five, and it drops to 60. Divide it by 6, and it drops to 50, and you see what's going on. You're still spending the same amount of money, but what we have found that this small group of people can get phenomenal results. And, of course, when you have a smaller group of people, Phil, what's it like to manage a group of people that are making an extra $1,300 or $1,400 a month?
It's so much easier, and they make their own decisions now. It goes back to accountability. And that's our main, one of our newest resolutions in the office, to make their own decisions and whatever helps our patients to get better dentally. In addition to that, to boost the morale, that's our own motto right now, is being more efficient and miles per gallon, and really just getting a mindset to focus in 1.6.
And I have no doubt that you will probably hit that. Now, here's what Phil is talking about in the miles per gallon. If you have a very efficient automobile, it gets very high miles to the gallon. And, of course, a large lumbering car that gets lots of power and inefficient, it takes a lot of gasoline, so that's low miles per gallon. So we, in a seminar in Chicago midwinter, last year, and I will be speaking there again 3 times this year. And one of the sessions is on knowing your numbers, and I relate a staff that takes a lot of people to low miles to the gallon. In other words, this thing takes a lot of gasoline. And one of the things that we have found is that with teams like Phil, when he provides the leadership and provides the direction for the team, and that all revolves around patient care, it also revolves around how do we do it efficiently, the team members start making decisions. I recently talked to a doctor who said she literally makes thousands of decisions, and I said, why is that? Well, after exploring a little bit, we discovered that in our first day that we meet with a new doctor, we call that the summit, we meet with the doctor and their spouse for a day, and the reason she makes thousands of decisions is that there is no direction. Now, she has an idea of the direction, but nobody else knows what that direction is, and so it's called micromanagement. No one can make a decision because she's the only one that knows the direction the ship is going, and so she's up there correcting steering engines all the time, you see, whereas in Dr. Guduco's office, he has made it real clear what he's trying to accomplish and then turned it over to some other people called the team, and they get to make a lot of these day-to-day decisions. And one of the things that we have found, and I've not actually talked to Dr. Guduco about this, but, well, we probably have in a seminar or something, but when the doctor's making all the decisions, number one, it's stressful for the doctor. And secondly, we have no corner on good decisions. In other words, other people can make good decisions also. And when we make a bad decision, and maybe I'm the only one on the call that's made a bad decision, if I make a bad decision, my team would tend and still tend to stay with it because it was my decision. And the results drop off. But if they make a decision that, in hindsight, turns out to be not such a good decision, they will correct it immediately because that was their decision. And when they see it not working, boy, it's just seamless the way it gets corrected. And that's one of the things that we see. Doctor, tell us a little bit more about, you know, you mentioned you were doing a lot of administrative work when you had 5 employees. Now you have 3, and you say your team is doing a lot of that. What kind of things have you turned over to your team, or what have you changed so you don't have all this paperwork to do?
Really, the charting is the key thing. If you get so busy to a point I have charts piled up on my desk, Erin pitch in, the hygienist, Regina, as well as my chair side, after we're done, they make sure that the charts are done. They ask me if there's anything else I need to get, you know, out of the office so we get home. And then we make sure that we have, besides the morning huddle, we have a PM huddle. Mm-hmm. And we've been trying to be consistent with that, and I'm really proud of the team this year, starting in this month, that we've been trying to make the PM huddle, and we made it pretty consistently this starting this year, 2008. So it's a lot of communication. It's something that I try to put more incentive, and today at the PM huddle, I put more incentive to the point where I told them, after the third quarter, if we're in target at 1.6, we're going to give you more days off. And they were like jumping up and down for joy.
And those are paid days off.
Paid days, exactly.
Now, how many days are you going to work this year, do you know?
180.
180.
Yeah.
How many days were you working when you started with us?
God, around maybe 190 plus or so. You know.
So you're down. I'd like to see you drop it down to less than that.
Yeah, drop it down. Yeah, I'm thinking of dropping even down more. Actually.
I'd like to see you get it down around 160. I believe you could and still produce the same amount. All right, made some other comments about how you used to do a lot of treatment plans for people who had just registered. You were doing treatment plans for people that had decided to go ahead with work, which is a lot of work. And there are a lot of doctors that do this, and they do these big complete examinations and then big presentation and many times with all kinds of details. And many of these patients don't even go ahead with work, and you've wasted a thing.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about how you do that now.
You mentioned when a new patient comes in, I have my front desk would go over what we call a power question. It's a short, truncated form of the medical history. And it's short and sweet, and it's done and over with. And then they kind of just give the patient orientation in the office, and then sits down and then introduces them to my chair side, or basically Regina, my hygienist. And Regina would go over questions, trying to go over, you know, what they really want out of the whole thing. And after that, she would make an entry into the computer. And then when everything's said and done, I get brought in. I just basically spend not a whole lot of time. And then after that, they take the whole ball and run with it and then schedule the patient.
When your staff is asking these questions, you know, since I wrote the questions, I know basically what the questions are, but how comfortable is your staff, individual team members, like your front desk person, for example? I know they're starting to talk money very early on in the conversation. They talk about it, you know, budget,
right,
that sort of thing, before you even get in the room. How did
right.
you get them through that?
It's just a matter of a lot of role-playing and the coaching from one of your consultants. Nancy was a very good person that helped us a lot. We thought it could never be done, but it was. And because my three team members they just have a great attitude about life. You know, they want to do well, and they enjoy what they do, and they want to help people get better. So it's just a matter of just practice makes perfect, and that's what we do.
So they ask questions about how can they help them, and
yes.
you know, how long has it been a problem, and how
yes.
has it affected you, and what have you done about it, and how'd that work?
Right, right.
Have you thought about a budget for this type of treatment? And they
exactly.
get into all of that, and then ask the patient
oh,
what
yeah.
they want to do next. So by the time you arrive, they have a general idea. They don't have the details, but they have a general
right.
idea of what the treatment may be.
Right.
And so by the time you actually start doing a treatment plan, that patient has, for the most part, has already accepted the treatment.
Exactly.
I mean,
I just have to go in and diagnose and validate the whole treatment and then
uh-huh.
tell Mrs. Smith this is what it is.
Yeah. And so that really has cut down your time there, which allows you a lot more time to be productive.
Exactly.
And you don't have to spend evenings doing treatment plans.
For
those doctors on the phone, this has been part of my campaign for years, is we never work out what I call the architectural drawings until the patient has put money down. And what I mean by that is my son-in-law is an architect, and when somebody comes in and starts talking in generalities about designing a building, he mainly builds multi-story, not high-rises, but multi-story steel, cement, medical buildings is what he mainly builds. And they have several meetings talking in generalities about what the client wants, what their needs are, and they don't do anything, maybe some preliminary sketches, before the patient, or in this case their client, knows some budgets. They know about what this building's going to cost. They know what the architectural fees are going to be. And that's all been accepted, and checks have been exchanged before they sit down, because they're drawing, you know, stacks of plans, worth of what I see in dental offices for years is dentists come in and they're basically doing detailed architectural drawings before the patient even really tells us what they want. And more importantly, they have not told us they want to go ahead. So we waste a lot of hours of our life. And if we were to put all that together, it's literally days and days of our life that we spent doing treatment plans for people that haven't even decided if they want to have treatment. And so Dr. Guduco and his team really have that system down. His hygienist in particular is really good at asking the questions and talking money and getting acceptance of that sort of thing. Let me ask you this question.
Yes.
You've been practicing 20 years.
Yes.
You've done well.
Yes.
But you weren't satisfied. You want a change in life, improvement of your lifestyle, improvement of your practice. Have you tried in the past to make some of these changes and reduce your overhead and raise your production? I mean, you've done well, so obviously you're a student of these things.
Yes. I tried many times. I tend not to. I try to implement as much as I could, but I need someone to tell me, give me direction to do that, and you've helped tremendously, Bill, with that.
Let me ask you this, and this is a little bit of a leading question, but was it the fact that I gave you information you'd never heard before?
Yes.
Or was there something else that made this happen? I mean, I would like to think the information I have is pretty much, if you get on the internet, you can probably find all the information. It's been out there. There were a few things that we taught you that were a little different, but what would you, if you could put, say one thing that coaching did for you, what would it be?
It would be teamwork and accountability.
Uh-huh.
You need a team in total in synchrony that would actually do things right the first time.
What'd you think when I first told you yeah, we're overstaffed?
I thought you were crazy. It can't be done.
Yeah, I remember that.
And now, and even when I brought my team, my hygienist goes, there's no way. I need an assistant for myself. I need this. I need that. And now look at her. She's just doing everything all by herself.
I don't think they'd let you hire another person now, would they?
No, they won't. They won't allow me. There's no way.
Uh-huh.
And they think we could do 1.6 piece of cake. It's like, wow. I never had this.
When you do 1.6, 1.3, 1.6 with your staff at 20%, when you calculate, or at the end of the year when you sit down to your accountant, what do you think your total net will be out of that 1.3 last year?
Probably around 700,000, 800,000.
About 7 or 8, and that includes. And notice he's a little quiet, and he says that we're not the IRS. But that includes, you know, that includes your salary, debt service, pension
yes.
plan contribution, et cetera. And
yeah.
every benefit the doctor takes out, it'd be between $700,000 and $800,000. Now, you see, part of the thing here is this, and we've had conversations about profitability, and I've been a champion for a long time to say that in calculating profitability or how to raise the profitability of a practice, there are a couple things you can do. One is you added $200,000 to your production without increasing your expenses to do that.
Right.
You drop your staff overhead to 20, and this is a very important part of our program, is to get your staff overhead down, because when you look at a profit and loss, there are only a couple things that make any difference. And a lot of doctors spend a lot of time worrying about their supply bill. You know, my gosh, my supply bill is 6%. What do I do? Well, you get on the Internet sites, and you try and save a little bit on your supplies, cheapest gloves on the planet, et cetera. And if you save 1%, you're lucky. You know, if you save 20% of your supply bill, that's 1%. But most doctors out there, and if any of you on the call that are in that range of 30, and that includes, by the way, our staff costs don't just include staff salaries. That includes all staff costs. That's matching Social Security. That's pension plans, medical insurance. It's everything that it costs to have that person on your team. And so it starts to add up. And if you're over 20%, for the most part, they're overstaffed. Now, part of the reason they're overstaffed is you can't just go back and let people go and expect things to happen. You have to have systems in place. You have to have efficient systems in place that allow three people to do this kind of work. Because if you're on the call tonight and you have five people and you say, okay, we're doing 1.3 and I just think I've got two extra people. But unless you give them the tools to work with and the methods. Now, you talked a little bit earlier about, you know, your hygienist collecting money, you're being cross-trained and all that sort of thing. What other systems have you put in place this year that have allowed three people to do this kind of production?
The bonus system.
Okay.
It's key. I mean, that really just accountability. They're taking home more money. It motivates people. And I think they're well compensated in our area compared to other areas. I mean,
well, I know you're... I have other clients in that general area, nobody in Vernon Hills, but I have other clients in the general Chicago area, and they're extremely
right.
And we have several clients in Chicago area that are very well compensated. And you do get great people. When you move a team from, I remember traveling to Russia a few years ago, back when Gorbachev was still in power and the communist system was still in place, the Russian people there had a saying. And the saying was, we pretend to work, and the government pretends to pay us. And their productivity was extremely low at the time. And that's a little bit what goes on in dental offices. We pay them just enough they don't quit, and they're working just hard enough we don't fire them. And we hire people, and then we hire them a helper. But we don't give them systems to work with. And one of the things that I see is I never accuse team members of not working hard. I mean, everybody works hard. But it's just like if Phil and I were to decide to play, since Phil's in Chicago, let's say that Phil and I and three or four other people here tonight, well, let's round it off to a full 12. Let's take a full 10 other people, and we're going to play the Chicago Bulls next week. Well, we might as well get 25 or 30 people to play the Chicago Bulls. We're still going to lose. But if we have the right people, in other words, some with some basketball ability, five people can get out there and do it. As a matter of fact, there have been several teams doing it very handily this year. But you see, a lot of dentists, what I see is that dental offices are trying to play, and they have the wrong people on the team. They don't have the systems in place, so what they do is they hire more people, but they keep the others. I say we hire incompetent people, don't train them, and hire them a helper. And so you've proven this year, if you have the right people and the right attitude and the right incentives, that a very small group of people can get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I want to open this up to questions for some of the audience tonight. What would be some questions and for Dr. Guiducco and... you know, don't pull any punches at all. Just ask whatever question that you would like to ask him. He volunteered for this call. I'm not paying him to be on this call, so be nice to him. questions from any of you. How does he make this transition and how does he do it? Some details.
Yeah, this is Dr. Bruce McNeil in Jacksonville, Florida. And
go ahead.
I got a question about your 20% on salaries. Do you start with their basic salary? Which would be different, like the hygienist gets paid more, and then take the difference from what you make to get to the for the bonus, or do they all get paid the same, or how do you divide that 20% up?
Well, first off, they all have different salaries, and hygienists generally in most parts of the country make about twice as much as the dental assistant, and the assistant makes a little bit less than the administrator. And so those salaries are negotiated individually, but then those are all added together, and then they get the difference. So up to the 20%.
So in a way, they all kind of know what each other makes.
They know what each other makes.
Oh, okay.
Most of my offices have a fairly, pretty much an open book system. They know what the doctor makes. They know what each member makes. They know all of that. And I'll tell you what we found. A lot of doctors are very secretive about that sort of thing. And I had a lot of help with a business model here in Oregon. He actually has tire stores in many western states. He has 400 stores, as a matter of fact, and 7,000 employees. And I always say I got my MBA from the school of Les Schwab. That was the man's name. I had a chance to spend a day with him one time at the time when he was earning about $100 million a year net income. And he gave me a day of his time, and I just picked his brain about business. And the interesting thing is he runs an open book system. Everybody in his team, every one of the 7,000 people, the books are open. They can look anytime they want. They know what he makes. And actually, they're very excited about what he makes. And one of the reasons they're excited about what he makes is every year, the third week of December, he divides half of the net income between the employees. So the more money that Les Schwab makes, the more they make. And they're very happy. They know what a set of tires costs. They know what the profit in that set of tires. They know what a store manager makes. They know what their assistant manager makes. They know all of these things. And he said that's what gives them the incentive to do a good job and move up. You're a kid changing tires, and you know the assistant manager is making $100,000 a year, putting in the same hours you are, and you're making 50 or 60, he says you want to be the assistant manager. And then when you're an assistant manager, you want to do a really good job and become a manager. And it goes on and on. So everybody knows all of that. And we have found that in many offices, the staff currently, they take the gross. Like most dental offices share the gross with the staff. They know what the gross is. And I always joke about the fact that if you don't share the numbers, they take the gross, subtract their own individual salary, and they assume you make the rest. and that's kind of what we find. Phil, I answered that question for you, but anything you want to add to that or change that? Or your office, are they open book? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they know. And they're very excited every time. They know they're going to bonus. Since we started your program, Bill, it's been they've been bonusing. It's an open book, and they're looking for their bonus.
Yeah, so they know exactly what the rules are. And that's another thing about this bonus plan for those of you on the call tonight. The rules are well spelled out. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows how to calculate the bonus. We literally have teams that are calculating their bonus on a daily basis, and it's part of the morning meeting where we are in the bonus for the month.
Yeah.
We're in bonus land. And
right.
It is amazing the difference it makes. Does that answer your question for Dr. Jacksonville?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Other questions?
This is Stephen in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
What is the general focus of your practice? Or are you just, you do everything? Do you do implants? Do you do endo? Do you do cosmetics? Are you focused on cosmetics?
Phil,
that's a very good question. My training is a little bit different in the sense that whatever comes in, I can be able to handle. In a sense that my bread and butter is root canal buildup and crowns. Not just one tooth, but a whole bunch of teeth that needs that type of treatment. If I need to do some cosmetic, a smile makeover, we've done several cases like that last year. It was averaging $35,000 to $40,000 per case. We're very fortunate to have those kind of cases. We do them. Right now I'm really getting tied a little bit more towards sleep apnea. I'm doing that as well. And I'm flying to Vancouver, learning how to place implants and bridge maintenance grafting procedures. I'm almost a third done with the programs a year long. I'm doing the implants now. So it's nothing fancy. It's more, instead of doing one tooth at a time, we're doing a lot more quadrants, doing a lot more rehabs, that type of thing. So I hope that answered the question.
One of the things that we're finding is that 15 years ago, a cosmetic practice is what I called a purple cow. In other words, it was something that made your practice special. And one of the things that we're finding in so many marketplaces today, every dentist in that marketplace is a cosmetic dentist. Now, there are various levels of skill and ability, but you look in the phone book or the website, and everybody's cosmetic. So they get very tightly niched. And one of the things that I have encouraged many of my clients to do is not niche their practice so tightly. And Phil is a good example of a good general dental base with some caviar tossed on the top. And one of the things that I'm impressed with is his willingness to learn. And he's joined this program out in Vancouver, British Columbia. It's a year-long program on implants, for example. And he's just barely getting started placing implants. But
right.
Are you doing any Invisalign?
Yeah, I do Invisalign. I've had background in ortho. I've been doing ortho, full fixed braces, for 20 years, but it's not a big type of a practice that I have in fixed orthodontics. And matter of fact, Bill was trying to discourage me to put more ortho. So definitely Invisalign is nice it's another armamentarium that you would actually use. It's very useful, especially pre-prosthetic-wise, when you're doing a smile makeover. If you have diastemas, if you could just equidistance the anteriors and get a golden proportion, you have more of an ideal case in that type of scenario.
One of the things that Phil said, I discourage him doing orthodontics, and again, it's all about miles per gallon, and what I find in so many general dental practices is, unless you're carrying about 100 active ortho cases, that is fixed appliances, it's an expensive hobby.
Yeah.
When I have a new client come in that's doing under 100, I say, well, let's study it. We study the overhead per hour, and we take a look at the hours we spend on ortho, and unless you do it really efficiently, and it can be done efficiently, but when I study it, I find the choice is either do it efficiently or don't do it. My best friend from dental school is an orthodontist, and he sees 100 kids in the afternoon. That's one day. And his appliance is down to a point. He only sees those patients once every eight weeks. And so, he can do a lot of ortho in a short period of time. And I find most general dentists try and put their orthodontics in between their crown and bridge patients, and very often they end up spending a long time in treatment because we've got an impression that didn't turn out and was more important to us to get the impression to be taken than to adjust the appliance so that nothing's broken or loose. We'll see you next month. So that's why I discourage so many from doing ortho. But Phil is a well-rounded, he's jumped everything he's trained on, he has trained extensively on, and he's well-qualified in several areas. Good question. What other questions?
This is Don Swoberlin in West Lafayette, Indiana.
Hi, Jeff.
Actually, Don, just to yourself out there.
Sorry.
That's okay. Do you do any external marketing? And if you do, who takes care of that? I have
external
marketing.
Very good question. At one time, we used to do one-hair dentists, and I felt that was not a great niche to get into. The quality of patients that we were getting wasn't that great. So we turned into really just networking. That's what Dr. Blanchard is really, really attuned to. The focus on the past year and a half, Don, was on sleep medicine. So I network a lot with physicians, with sleep labs and things like that. So that's helped us a lot. And magazines that we've done with Rocket Dog, they're a phenomenal group that helped us put out this magazine ad that we're planning to place out to pretty soon. Beautifully done, and basically we're getting some patients from that. So, you know, we could always use new patients, but you could have 200 patients per month, but the quality of patients that you're getting is not as good as you really want to. That defeats the purpose of what your goal is. So that's really about it. I hope I answered your question on that, Don.
But your marketing is mostly networking.
Networking, yes.
Which is, it's still the best. I mean, I really believe in what Rocket Dog does, creating brand for people. They do my marketing. They've done a great job of doing that. And I think every doctor needs to create that brand. But external marketing is not a substitute for networking. And I have clients, I have a client I talked to today that, gosh, he and his partner spent $350,000 last year on advertising, and yet over 60% of their patients came from patient referrals. So that's a lot of money for 40% of their patients. And so it's mainly networking that we do. Now, you do have to have a good package. You need a package of material, because when they do show up in your office, and people like to, when they make referrals to you, they like to know that what the patient is going to see and feel and taste and smell and everything is consistent with the level of care that they're telling their friend they're going to get. So you do want to have all this material well done.
Do you find that, I'll put two questions here together. Do you find that your patients that you get from your physician referrals are highly insurance motivated? And number two, are your fees fairly commensurate with others in the area, or do you even worry about that? And the reason I ask that question is that I get a lot of resistance from my staff on the fees that I have.
You need a new staff.
I'm thinking that myself.
I had that conversation with a patient, with one of my clients today, Don. He wanted to raise, we did his overhead per hour in hygiene, and this man lives in a very affluent community. It's one of the most expensive communities in Canada. It's Whistler, B.C. And we figured out the overhead per hour, and we figured in hygiene it was costing about $75 an hour out of his pocket to see a hygiene patient. So I suggested raising his fees, and his staff just said, oh, my gosh, we can't do that. And I said, well, if your staff is not excited about your fees and about the quality of care that you're providing, then they need to find an average office to work in. This happens to be a doctor that's extremely well-trained, of a beautiful office. He does an incredible job for people, and he's worth that. And, you know, he lives in a high-rent district, and he wanted to raise his fees 20%, and his staff is all saying, oh, you can't do that. Our patients won't do that. Well, if your staff is not excited enough to recognize the quality of the work that we're doing and be excited about it and enthusiastic about it, then we have the wrong staff. My staff this year in my coaching program pushed me to raise my fees. They pushed me to raise my fees. I'd have been happy doing what I was doing it for, and they said, no, for what you're doing, it's worth more money than that. You need to raise your fees. So we did.
It's interesting you say that, because my employees have had a career change. When they go to other offices, we'll call back and talk to my staff and say, you just don't know how good it is there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see, if they don't get it, because they're the ones that have to talk money with the patients, and if they're apologetic about it, we're the wrong people. We're the wrong people. So anyway, I butted in there. Phil, how'd your staff do with that? And answer Don's questions on how your fees stack up.
First of all, the first question you have was, are they resistant? Are they insurance-driven? Yeah, of course. Coming from medical, it's like practicing like Walmart, so to speak, what you mentioned, Bill. Bottom line is but it's a change of mindset, and my team is really good in trying to explain that. Initially, it was really tough because, you know, they're so insurance motivated. How much would that my insurance would cover it? Pretty much now, we just collect up front, and then we have a third party that would take care of that. They take out a loan, they do the treatment, and they're much happier that way. And we talk about the power questions that Bill had alluded to. Is you get into the emotions of people, because with sleep apnea, you're talking about life and death situation. You know, I don't think you'll die from a tooth abscess, not unless it really gets into the heart or the brain. The bottom line is with sleep apnea, you will die right in the middle of sleep. So it's a quality of life, and the fact that your spouse is not sleeping you each night. So they get into that kind of emotion, and you'd be amazed the kind of things that you would elicit based on that reason. So that's one part of the question.
So the emotional questions are, if I can interrupt, the emotional questions are designed to let them see how it's affecting the quality of their life. And when they see how it's affecting the quality of their life, and this, by their answers, we're not lecturing to them, we just ask questions. And
right.
Like Phil just said, you know, if your spouse is not sleeping with you at night because you're snoring, how's that working for you? And what's that worth? You get into these questions, and by the time we're ready to start talking money, which is very early in the conversation, they're ready. It doesn't matter. They're ready to go ahead. And most
right.
of my patients doing sleep apnea and TMD and these various kind of quasi-medical areas, we just tell them that, you know, your medical insurance probably isn't going to pay because I'm a dentist. And your dental insurance is probably not going to pay because it's a medical problem. And so we'll be happy to fill out the forms for you and give them to you, but the way we get started is you go ahead and make the arrangements with us, and if you need to, we can help you arrange financing, but we make care of that's all taken care of before we start.
Right.
And it just eliminates the issue.
Yeah, we had a new sleep apnea patient that was referred by a local dentist, and my team, like I say, my team does everything. By the time I get in there, I just explain what we're going to do today. And then my financial arranger, whether it's Kate or my hygienist or my chair side, we just explain how much it is. And then next thing you know, you're doing Capital One. And then after that, they do what you need to do. And then after that, they're happy, they're excited, and that's it. And then they tell me, my wife's going to be really happy after I'm done with this, right, Dr. Guduco? I don't know. We'll see what happens. So
that's kind of like trying to play the violin when you take the cast off. I don't know if your wife's going to be happy with you or not. Good answer, Phil.
As far as the price increase and stuff, my team, they're very sensitive to that. They call around. They don't want it to be way overpriced, but they want to make it fair at the same time, for materials and things like that, for a lab especially, make sure that we're compensated for that. So fee increases, yeah, we've done that, especially when we started with Dr. Blashford. We've done that, but I heard some resistance, but no matter how much you tell them how much it is, they're still going to complain no matter what. Whether the crown is $1,000, $1,500, $2,000, they're still going to complain no matter what. So
lower your fees, no complaints.
Lower your fees, right.
I've got time for one more question from any of the doctors on the call.
How many new patients a month do you like to have to support, what you're doing?
It'd be great if I get between 15 to 20 new patients a month. That's all we could handle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd be happy with that.
It depends on, again, there are a lot of numbers tossed around in dentistry, and it really... it depends on the style of practice, how many patients you need. There is no set answer for that. I get a kick out of some of the articles I see written how they say you need X number of patients. Well, it depends how much you do per patient. I have a client who happens to be my personal dentist, and he does nothing but full mouth rehabs. Well, he doesn't need very many patients a month. And other doctors, I have a doctor that works with me that's virtually, I have a pediatrician that works with me, but I have another doctor who's a very well-established general dentist with a huge pedo component in his practice. And because he doesn't do a lot of dentistry per patient, most of them are fairly healthy, he needs a tremendous number of new people per month. And so anywhere in between those two extremes will be your answer. But I think every doctor needs to figure out, based on your history, how many you need. And I, another thing that we teach is that doctors do a 80-20 spreadsheet, and we study which patients, the characteristics of all of those patients, that top 20% that we do 80% of our work on. And one of the things that we have found is most of those are new patients. We have found that most of the people in the recall programs, well, if you're not presenting complete treatment to them, you're going to have the broken teeth and the single crowns coming in fairly steadily. But if you start presenting complete treatment, the people either decide to do the treatment or they don't want to do the treatment. And kind of stays the same way. So the new patients are critical in every practice. But the number is going to depend upon your style of practice. And there are many styles. The longer I consult with doctors, the more styles I discover. And I've just so many styles that work really well. And that's one thing I really, really work at, is not to have a cookie-cutter approach, that everybody is different and has different goals and aspirations and work at a different tempo. And if I were to put my, by the way, I have two doctors, several doctors in the Seattle area, and the one that basically has a fetal practice, if I were to put him in the practice of the doctor who is my dentist and does nothing but full mouth rehabs, he would go crazy. He would go crazy for lack of activity. And if I were to put my doctor who does nothing but full mouth rehabs in this fetal practice, he would go crazy because he just couldn't stand to see that many people in a day. He likes to see a couple people a day. And like my friend that's a pedodontist, my gosh, he'd have less hair than I do if he were in that. What are you all laughing at? But you see, they would. So you have to find a style that works for you, and that's one of the things that I really work on is, you know, what is it that makes that particular doctor happy? And then when this thing about staff came up, then we have to find that, to help that doctor find a staff that is happy with the same kind of things. And I find so many offices where the style of treatment is, or the style of practice changes when we change staff members, or, you know, my staff doesn't like that style, so we do this, but the doctor's going crazy. So that's not how it works. The doctor sets the pace, the doctor sets the direction, and we select team members that want the same thing. Well, I want to thank Dr. Guduco for being on this call tonight and taking part of his evening, because I know that's one of the things he and his wife said they wanted more of when they came to work for me, is they wanted more time, they wanted their dad home at night. And so
yes,
we've accomplished that, and the nice wife came away here for an hour tonight. So I do thank you for that, and I want to thank
you're
all
welcome.
Thank you. I want to thank all of the doctors for being on this call.
Thank you.
We are going to send you a complimentary audio version of our A-book. One of our representatives will call you, and my only request is, whether you're interested in our program or not, at least have the courtesy to return the call and say you're not interested or you're not interested now. But please listen to the book. You can, it's a CD, and you can listen to it on your way to work. And there are seven offices in it that are, they actually recorded their own stories, so to speak. A couple of them we had readers for, but most of them did it themselves. And we had many of our clients. I know one of our doctors, their whole staff, volunteered to read some stories that doctors didn't want to do their own. So thank you very much for being on this call. Michael, thank you very much from Rocket Dog for helping put this call together. And if any of you are looking for an excellent branding program, Michael Elliott at Rocket Dog Dental, and you can look at rocketdog.com. They're in Seattle. They do all of my marketing as well. They do a lot of our clients. They do well. And if you're looking for a way to increase patient acceptance, Care Credit does an excellent job of providing financing for patients, and they're also one of our sponsors of these calls. And the call will be recorded tonight. The call was recorded, and it will be available on our website in a couple days, and you can go to that. So thank you very much for being on the call tonight, and have a nice evening.
Yes, thank you, Billy.
Thank you very much, Phil.
Thank you.
Well, yes.